And he ain't any better than anybody else.
No, he's supposed to set the example for the rest of us and everything. Uh-huh. But he ain't doing a very good job of it.
Well, that's what they're worried. That come April 15th, the federal income tax is pretty much based on the honesty of every man to send in what he's supposed to. And when they look at what the president's doing, they're not going to collect much this year.
But it'll take a damn poor innocent fella, and they'll cut him wide open, a little fella. If he can't do anything better, they'll put a taxman on his house if he owns one.
And according to that, he didn't pay much more income tax than what I paid when I was single working on construction work.
Right, and he made, I don't know, $100,000, $200,000?
Yeah. If you're into the right party, you can get by with anything.
The same as I always said about that Vietnam business. Had nothing on it, just a damn money deal, that's all it was. The whole damn business, it never amounted to nothing. Just the money they made.
Where do you think it's all gonna go?
What?
Everything building up the way.
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I thought 3-4 years ago things would start to go down. I thought if they get up the peak, and usually when things get up the peak, they start to go down the other way. But no, we don't seem to be up there yet.
I don't know where the peak is.
My God, I guess not. No limit to anything.
This will be sound reel 10.
Tell us about when you worked. You worked at Brooksy's before.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did you work there?
7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
Did you work besides at Brooksy's?
No, I worked. Before I went to Brooksy's, I used to work in the woolen mill.
Oh, you did? I didn't
over
know that.
Over to Queechy there. They tore it down while they got the Queechy Lakes business there.
Oh, they had a woolen mill there?
Mm-hmm. Dewey's woolen mill.
Was that when you were married before?
No, that was way before I was married. So way back, I don't know, must have been 40-something, I guess.
Yeah.
Way back then.
Were you married when you worked at Brooksy's?
Yeah, the last part of me working there, yeah.
Was when you were married?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I worked there before I was married, but the last, I was married during the time I worked there, so.
Uh-huh. And did you quit working there just before you came up here? Was that?
No.
Is that when you stopped, or did you stop?
No, I stopped there right after I was married the first time, because he worked on construction, and he was way off working, you know, and so I didn't want to stay in Sharon, and he'd be off somewhere boarding, you know, so we bought a trailer, and then we went to Gorham, New Hampshire first,
mm-hmm.
and I was over there 2 years, and then we went up to Newport, Vermont, and we was there pretty near 2 years there.
Oh, in Newport, that's where Paul and Eleanor lived.
Eleanor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that's
yeah.
where you lived.
Yeah, that was where I lived, my first husband. He worked on construction up there,
mm-hmm.
and then we went there quite 2 years when he died.
And then what'd you do?
I came down to White River, and I went to work in the nursing home then.
Oh, that's right.
And that's where I worked until I came up here.
Did you cook there? Is that what you did?
Yeah, between there and taking care of the patients, too. If they were short, she'd send me in to help take care of the patients, you know. I might be cooking, and if they was wanted some help in there, I'd have to go in there and then come back out and finish my cooking. And
did you work a regular shift?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You didn't have to work at night or something?
I did for a while at one time. I worked at night because I worked in with the patients at night. I didn't cook then. She had somebody else, and then she put me in there at night. But I didn't like to work nights, and that was when, just before I broke my arm, before I came up here.
You broke your arm just before you came up here?
Mm-hmm.
How'd you do that?
I fell down on the ice down, coming down out of the dooryard down my sister.
Oh boy, did you have a cast?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, clear up above my elbow.
Oh, that's when you came up here with your arm broken.
Yeah, yeah. And I stayed up here for pretty near 3 months. Then I went back and finished, I think I worked about a month or so after that. And then I quit and came up here, and we was married in May. I came up here just about the first part of May, I guess. Uh-huh. Before we was married, so.
Did you come up here at first because your arm was broken and you couldn't work?
Yeah. I couldn't work with one arm down there, you know, doing anything. So instead of staying down around there, I came up here instead, so.
How long had you known Kenneth at that time?
We went together about 3 years before we was married.
And how did you get together? I mean, you were all the way down there? And
well, as I said, when his brother died there, that I used to go with, I wrote to him, and then he started writing to me. And then, of course, he invited me up here. And when I had off, like a weekend, or sometimes I'd work 10 days in a row and have 4 days off instead of taking 2 days a week the way we was, you know, supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I came up here on my days off. Again, came down after me, or I had somebody, you know, come after me. I'd come up, stay my 4 days, and then go back to work. And
uh-huh.
So that's how we got together.
You knew his brother?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when did you know him? Before you were married, or?
Yeah, I went with him when he was in the service, yeah.
But was he away, or? When he was in the service, was he around here?
No, he came from around, you know, from here. He lived here with Ken, I guess, at that time. And then he went into the service.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we corresponded back and forth all the time during he was in the service. And when he came home on leave, you know. And then after he, because I shouldn't say it, but after he came home, I had no idea he was going with somebody else, and so we broke up at that time, so.
Oh, he found out that he was playing around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were supposed to be married, but I found out, so I guess I ended it, so.
Oh, yeah, you're gonna be married to him.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Did you know Kenneth at that time?
I didn't know him too well, because I didn't see him that much. No, I came up here at one time with his brother, and of course I met him then. And then when Ken was in the service, he came to see me down to Sharon at one time. But you know, I didn't know him that well, because I didn't come up here that often.
Mm-hmm.
I just came up here once, I guess, as I said, with his brother there when he was home on leave. And so I didn't know him that well. This Ken said I didn't say anything anyway, so. When he came.
You were real shy when you came up here?
I never was too talkative anyway, you know, especially with people I didn't know, you know, so. So but, yeah, that's the way we met.
So what, then you really got to know each other sort of from the letters that you wrote?
Mm-hmm. As I said, then Ken invited me up here. Of course, I started, you know, coming up here. Then we started going together, so.
Did he put you to work when you came up here?
Well, I always, you know, cleaned up the house when the days I was up here and so, stuff like that, so. Yeah, it was a good job getting somebody, you know. He came down a few times and got me himself, but of course he didn't drive too much at that time either. You had to hire somebody, or Harry and Marion came down. Harry and Marion brought him down the first time he met me.
Brought him down to your place?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you knew them?
Oh, yeah, I knew Harry and Marion, yeah. I knew him more than I did Ken, you know, at the time before, so. I'd met them, you know, knew them better than I did Ken, so, when I was going with his brother.
Oh, I see. So why did they bring him, they brought him down to?
You know, well, he came down after me. That he'd invited me up that weekend that I had off. And so he came down to get me, and they brought him down, so.
And you wrote letters during that
mm-hmm,
whole time?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Do you still have the letters?
No.
You don't keep things like
no.
That. I still have letters from my
yeah.
old boyfriend I had when I was in high school who went away in the service, and we wrote letters back and forth. I've never looked at them, but they'd probably be pretty interesting to look at after all this time.
Helen, how'd you find things when you came up?
Well, just like any man living alone, Ken Watt, you know, didn't keep things picked up too good. And then, of course, he had his dogs, you know, and they was always in the house on the bed and everything, you know. And, well, it wasn't, you know, too bad. But like a lot of men, you know, they don't keep things picked up like a woman does, so. No, it wasn't too bad for, you know, for him living alone, so.
Did he have different habits during the, different kind of schedule during the day when he was living alone? I mean, did he, like, stay up real late at night? What, I think you...
Yeah, right? Yeah. He used to stay way up and watch the late shows there at night last time. And then maybe 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, he'd be frying him hamburger or something, you know, for... eating at that time in the morning, so. And I wasn't used to that. One night I was up here and I'd gone to bed, and he hollered about 1 o'clock in the morning and said, "You go get up and have something to eat?" He was cooking, because, you know, he didn't eat regular meals. He'd, you know, have his breakfast, and maybe he wouldn't get him anything for dinner. And then when he got his chores done, he'd come in, you know, maybe fry him up in big pans of fried potatoes or cook hamburger or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he'd lunch when he got ready to go to bed, you know. And as I said, he used to stay up at night, so. Of course, he didn't get up too early in the morning, I guess, but. He don't now, but I guess sometimes it was later than what it is now, you know, if you want anybody around, so.
He didn't get to have to do his chores too early.
No, I guess not some days anyway, so.
Sounds a lot like me before I met Suzanne.
That's the way it is,
usually. Yeah, that's the way, because I said he used, you know, would stay up at night late, watch them late movies, you know. And, well, now he don't do that, so.
Did you do that then,
too? No. Because, of course, I was... time I got up around here where I could relax and everything, I was all tired out from working, you know, because when you work 10 days right in a row and don't have any, you know, work 8 hours every day for 10 days in a row, you get pretty tired.
Oh, yeah, 10 days in a row.
And then lots of times I said when I was working nights, you know, I couldn't sleep too good in the daytime. So when I got up here and it was quiet, you know, you could go to bed at night and sleep. So.
Uh-huh. Did you like it? I mean, you were like living in town more than here. What did you think about this place when you started coming up here, when you first moved here?
Oh, I liked it pretty good. It was lonesome at first because I was used to being, as I said, that it's the same now. I was used to being, if I wanted to go shopping or go to the store, I could walk, you know, because I just, down White River, I just lived a little ways from the, in the village of White River there, where I could just walk in when I wanted to. So it was hard for me, just same as it is now, you know, because I can't get out that much. But I just made up my mind that after we was married, it was going to be my home, and so I'd have to get used to it, that's all. So.
But, did you miss working?
Well, yeah, I like to be working. I would now if I had a way to get out and in all the time. Yeah, I like to work. Well, of course, with the way Ken is now, I help him so much, it'd be hard for me to work, you know. But
you help him now more than you used to.
Well, I've always helped him ever since I've been up here.
It's like a regular job.
Yeah, I mean, since we've been married, you know. And I did the days I come up, you know, if there was anything like gathering sap and things like that. I don't mind doing it, you know, but as I said, I like to work out where I got money coming in, too, so.
Yeah, that's always satisfying.
Yeah, because, I don't know, I feel if I have my own money, earn my own money, I can do what I want with it.
Yeah. Where,
with what money, you know, we have to figure with the other money.
So it's always different when you earn your own.
Mm-hmm. You feel as if you can spend it for something, you don't have to figure that you got to use it for something else, you know, so.
If you were making your own money now, what would you spend it on?
Oh, that's a lot of things, you know, I buy that I don't have now, so. Well, there's a lot of things I could have now, but I just feel I can get along without them, where we need the money for something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Where if I did have an income of my own, I could feel I might be able to spend a little more, so.
Yeah. Was there ever any question of you working once you got married and came up here?
No, guess not, but I didn't have no way to get anywhere, because, as I said, I probably could have got a job down at the nursing home, but you know, in the wintertime, you can't always get out and in. That's why I never went and looked for any work.
Uh-huh.
Because, as I said, you have to be there every day, and some mornings you don't know if you could. And as I said, with him, you don't know every day whether he could drive you to town or not. So.
And you never learned to drive?
No. I tried once, but I run the tree and I lost my courage. So.
Lost your courage?
Yeah. Yeah. I drove on the state road from part way from White River clear up Sharon. I turned into the driveway where my folks lived, and I guess I turned too sharp and didn't think put my brakes on, and I rammed the fender into the tree.
And that was it?
Yeah. And I never had the courage afterwards to try again.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I wished I could, because it would be handy now. With Kennedy, he wished that I would learn. Because it would be handy, you know, for him, so.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I just can't get up the courage to try again. And I'm awful nervous riding now, anyway.
Uh-huh.
It bothers me to. I like to ride, and especially some people don't bother me when they drive. And other people that I ride with, I'm nervous all the time that I ride with them, so.
Yeah.
I don't know, just I guess I get older, you get nervous or something. So I don't think I'd ever be able to learn to drive now.
Mm-hmm.
Guess,
How would Kenneth feel about your working if you could have worked once you got married?
I don't know. He never said, you know. So.
I mean, he doesn't have the feeling that women, that your wife's supposed to be at home.
No,
and not, I mean, some people feel that
yeah,
way. Like
he never said anything about it. Anytime I ever said about working out or anything, he'd say, well, go ahead, Toronto. So I said, that's the way I suppose he felt about it. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I never tried, just said, because I knew, you know, it wouldn't be any use, because there wasn't anybody else right here that was going anywhere at that time, you know, that would be on this road that would be going, so.
This will be Sound Reel 11.
Yeah, our big family's pretty nice. I had four brothers and I had a sister. We was always a pretty happy family.
When you were a boy here,
I come here when I was 3 years old. My folks just, they worked down in Enfield, New Hampshire, down on the Mascoma Lake. He was a band boss down there for the North Family Shakers. And I was born down. And I come back here when I was 3, coming 4 in the fall, 1911. And I've been here most of the times since then, only about 4 years in the service. And most of the time has been spent here. I worked out some around town, but most of the time I've spent right here.
And about how old were you when you started to help your father out on this farm?
We always had something to do from the time we was big enough to walk. Wood to get in, help get the cows, feed the hens, or something like that from the time we was big enough to go to right along up. And we always figured as we got older, there'd always be one of us here to help them. While the rest of us working out or something, there'd be one here. We'd take turns. And there'd always be one to home to help. And there was right up through as long as my folks lived. There's always one of us here to help them.
When you were school age, you went to school right in town?
Yeah, when we went to school, we walked from here down where Bob Ainsworth now lives and caught a school bus, a school team. They drove the school team of horses then and rode the school team from there to the village school and then back up as far as where McKaiser lived at that time. And then we walked about a mile home. We had to walk a mile each way.
Did you go to church?
We never done too much fishing. Used to go about 3 miles to a pond and go swimming. And we'd go about every Sunday to this pond and learn to swim. And just a minute we learned why we could swim a little bit, and then we didn't care anything about going near the water again.
Is this pond still around here?
It's pretty well filled up now, I guess. Unless they have drained it and cleaned it out. It was pretty well filled up the last I knew. It's in the age of verse here. It might have been cleaned out and fixed up, for all I know. You know how our wards live?
Yeah, by the Shell Station.
Yeah, and go just below that, by the old barn was, go right, and it's right down in the hollow.
Mm-hmm. Land was a lot more public then. You could go almost anywhere on anyone's.
Yeah, you could go anywhere. Nobody cared, as long as you behaved yourself. No. You was welcome to go on anybody's land. Nobody cared.
Yeah, I remember you told me how Harry was coming across the commander's land up here.
Yeah. He changed the commander's ideas pretty quick. He slipped a couple shells into the rifle and yanked the lever up, let the hammer back down on safety. Old commander said he could go across there any time he wanted to, but unload that rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can see them old Navy commanders and generals in the Army, P people have to jump, you know, just the minute they say anything. They get in the habit. They think everybody's got to jump. They get independent, bullet-headed. And everybody's got to jump when they holler. Well, that don't work too good up around here.
No. I guess there's but one colonel in town now. Dick Betts fella.
Yeah.
He works for Peanut, I think.
Yeah. Dick's a pretty good fellow, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he probably wasn't in so long that he thought that everybody's got to jump when he spoke. I imagine he made a pretty good band, too. It ain't what they know, it's the louder they can holler. The man who can holler the loudest, he gets them jobs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't what they know. We've had sergeants in the army there that could bellow and blat. Well, they'd get places. Somebody else who was quiet, he wouldn't get nowhere. I guess Dick was in quite a while.
Yeah, he probably was in 20 years through the war and then retired or something.
Gosh, I don't know. I think he was in quite a while after the war was over, I think. I think he must have maybe was in 20 years or something.
Is he from Chelsea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if he was born in Chelsea, but he was a small boy here and went to school. Yeah. They lived first house that you pitched down to go down in Chelsea while Lemieux's owned.
Oh, that one that was fixing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they used to live. Yeah, he was a small boy when he was around here.
He got quite a house now. The one in town there.
Yeah. Yeah, his folks lived there while Lemieux's fixing up. Somebody stole the windows out of that the other night.
The storm windows?
Smashed them out.
Smashed them out?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Boy, you gotta stay right with something you own now.
That's right now. It ain't always the kids that do it either. Sometimes it's men grown. They've had a lot of trouble up to Burlington, up at Park, Battery Park, and breaking the lights and breaking the settees up. And they're going to close that up if they don't quit it. I guess on the last news of such matter.
Yeah.
It's been happening all summer. And in a lot of your big cemeteries, you've been breaking the big stone right
that.
Over.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Boy, there's sure no excuse for that.
Why, I can't see anybody going into a cemetery, especially. You can see a young kid throwing a stone into a window, because all kids like to hear glass smash.
Yeah.
You can see them doing that, but you can't see them tipping over a monument, a gravestone. Lassa said it happened right down here, down, too. Over there in the old cemetery. A lot of them been broke over.
This over summer. The years or recent?
Just this summer, since he mowed it. Since he'd been working in there this summer, they broke them over. And one man wouldn't break over a common stone. It'd take more than one man to do it.
Yeah, I saw on TV, you'd think they had a pair of oxen. I mean, they were four feet thick.
Yeah.
They probably were four people with bars and everything.
Yeah.
Serious business.
Yeah, one man never bend them over. Take him old stone up in the old cemetery, but a man could bend one of them over or break it or something. But these new stone, one man never break them. I can't see any object in that. That's just pure meanness.
Tell me some more about those dreams.
About what?
Those dreams sound mighty interesting.
That dream?
I have some of mine, but see, my dreams are all set in the city.
Yeah.
I don't have a hay wagon and a dream in 100.
Well, this special one that I had last night, I dreamed I had this big load of baled hay. Oh, it was an enormous load, way up in the air, and I was sitting up on the top, driving on old black power horses that I had years ago. And Arthur was a kid, and he was on the back end of the load of hay. And I was kept pulling on the horses, and I kept sliding on the bale of hay. And I was having a hell of a time to keep myself up on the hay, then still hold my horses. And then I finally woke up. I was all ready to slide down on the horses. And I woke up. Yeah, very often I have dreams like that.
And they all seem real when you wake up.
Oh yeah, they're just real. I'd wake up and I'd be all sweat, you know, and be just as so I really was there, you know.
Yeah, they say everyone dreams, but not everybody remembers them.
Yeah.
Remembering them's something else.
Yeah.
You wake up and you knew you dreamt something. I dreamt something last night. Alarm went off, and by the time I reach over and turn it off, the dream's gone.
Yeah.
There's no alarm. Sometimes I'll remember it.
Yeah, I have some corking old dreams sometimes. Sometimes I get dreaming I'm driving a big truck, loaded, and going down this big steep hill, and the lights went out. And it's dark, you know, and I'm going like hell, and I'm putting on the brakes, and the brakes won't hold too good. But before I get down to the bottom, I always wake up.
That's good.
Oh boy, you're going something. I don't know, it might take back to something that really happened, you know, to somebody else. And oh, I'm going like hell down this awful hill, and the lights go out, and I'm putting the brakes on, and I don't know why I'm pulling the sheets all off of bed or what I'm doing, but I'm pulling the emergency brake, and just before I get down to the bottom, just before I get ready to crash, I wake up.
Yeah, they say you can't dream your own death.
Yeah.
That you'll always wake up before something bad happens to you.
This will be Sound Reel 12.
God, I guess they gathered their buckets and took them to the sugar house. And had the sugar rig going. Set the buckets on the sugar rig till they thawed out, and then they dumped the ice into the back pan. God, I guess he worked for pretty near a week before he got the ice out of them. He lost a lot of them. Quite a chore to take a big sled and go all through the woods and pick your buckets off a tree and load them on the sled and take them to sugar house, thaw them out, take them back and hang them on. A lot of work to it.
I can see that. It's double work.
Yeah, and it's cold damn work too, because them buckets are on with solid ice. But I guess we didn't get enough into them this time. So it was going to hurt them any. Because they just run a little bit that first day.
Yeah.
And then it started to run. They probably be all right. You probably won't have to tap them again. Just as soon as the ice gets out of the spout, they'll start running again. But these down here didn't start. How cold they'd be tapped. The wind's going to dry them up. So them will be the ones that have to rim over. And wind raises hell with the running of them. The years that you get a lot of wind, you don't get so much sap.
Remember the story you told me down at the sugar house about that Frenchman who thought he could tap any time?
Oh.
Could you tell me that again?
Oh, about Johnny Drudge? Yeah, he come over from the old country. He's a Frenchman. And he bought a big farm over in Versailles, clear up on the heights. And they told him that he wanted sugar. So he went to work and bought a new rig and bought the buckets. And he had a lot of boys. And they went in and they tapped everything that was a maple. And he done pretty good. He made a lot of it. It's not too high price in them days, but he made pretty good. And he was downtown and asked him, said, Johnny, how'd you make out in sugar in? Oh, he said, pretty good, pretty good. Say, guess you didn't get spring work done. He said, guess tap again. He didn't know, but he could tap any time he wanted to and the sap would run. And the next year, it wasn't so good a year, and they worked pretty hard, and they didn't make much. And somebody see Johnny down at the village and said, Mr. Drudge, how'd you make out? Oh, he said, no do with a damn this year. He says, I wish I shan't tap. But he done pretty well. He raised a big family. I guess he had 12 children.
Mm-hmm.
Made a pretty good living. Everybody now is out for themselves. They don't have time to neighbor.
Do you think people are less honest now than they used to be?
Well, the general honor, the moneyed people are dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
They do anything for a dollar. Two-thirds of your big bugs, your millionaires don't know what honesty is. Take your Watergate business down now. Your president of the United States and a whole bunch of them. Do you think they're honest? Well, it don't look that way. It's going to take them about another year and a half to prove whether they're honest or dishonest. And look at the millions of dollars they're going to throw into that. To find out when they already know that damn bunch of crooks.
Do you remember any lessons from your dad when you were growing up about honesty and how to treat people and all that?
Well, my dad always said, use everybody just as you want them to use you when you get along in this world. And I've remembered that for a good many years.
That's pretty good advice, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty good if anybody will live by that. But we all get off a narrow path once in a while, you know, but most people, especially farm people, they're pretty honest with each other. Back in the 1900s, neighbors used to neighbor a lot more than they do now. They depended on each other. They didn't have the money. And they depended on each other My dad and a neighbor here used to neighbor back and forth, and I don't remember ever a dollar changing hands. They'd help each other hay and help each other cut corn, and anything that happened to come up, they'd help each other. And if a neighbor was sick, the whole neighborhood would get together and go in and cut him up a wood pile, haul it up, put it in his shed. Well, I never think of anything like that today. Outside of a very few close neighbors, they don't neighbor the same as you used to.
Yes, it's quite a difference, I guess.
This has always been a good neighborhood here. It still is a good neighborhood. They're good neighbors, but they don't depend on each other the same as you used to. Everybody for themselves. And the devil for the whole of us. That's the way it works out. Everything is too damn fast. You coming from New York City, where everything is about 10 times as fast down there as it is here. And here it's 10 times as fast than it used to be back in 1900s. Everything is ripped air and gold now. It's too fast for old people. Used to figure on just about making a good living, let the rest of the world go by, and now you've got to go fast to keep up with everything else. In them days, everything was horse and buggy days, and everything that was done with the horses, now everything is done by machinery, and you've got to have machinery to keep up with the times. You can't go fast enough with horses to keep up.
Sack buckets, I think, are getting hard to get.
I wouldn't wonder. There's lots of things. This last year especially, it's hard to get. Same as axe handles, sledgehammer handles, and steel goods, and groceries are getting, they're getting very hard to get, different things. Even say there might be a shortage on bread. On wheat, selling the wheat all to foreign countries, and then crying here because they're going to be short of flour. It's hard to understand a lot of things. This gasoline business, all it is just to get the prices. When they get the prices up to 75 or 80 cents a gallon, you'll see plenty of gasoline. The whole damn thing is just to get the price up. Everything is money, money.
Do you use much gas now?
No, I don't use very much. I bought some for the tractor to work in sugar place. About 2 gallons a week is all the gas I use. Go back and forth to town. Got an old Jeep out here that's run 4 years come May, and I put 8,000 miles on it in 4 years. That's as far as I go. To the neighborhood, but not very often.
You couldn't use less gas than that.
No, I don't use much gas. There hadn't ought to be a shortage as far as I'm concerned. And then we use for the chainsaw. And probably that don't average, maybe 15 gallons a year or something like that. Maybe 20. And then I buy some for him with the crawler for sugaring to plow the roads. And then we usually use the horses to do the gathering. So it don't take too much gas to run and do the sugaring.
back in 1900, it didn't take a drop of gas.
No, I didn't. I never had a car till about 1927, I guess, was the first car I ever had. You could buy 5 gallons of gas for 97 cents then. Get a 5 gallon can for a dollar almost anywhere. And we never went very far then, just around town. Never drove the city much. Now it's over $3 for 5 gallons. That's the difference.
And cars don't go as far for the same 5 gallons.
No, gas ain't the one as good now as far as back then. I think I give almost 60 cents a quart of oil the other day. And that was just a regular gas, regular oil. Not nothing special.
What it used to be? Oil.
Oh, boy, back at when I first started running cars, you buy oil 15 cents a quart. I don't know if it's cheaper than that.
Do you change your oil every, fall of the year and spring of the year or some
I never change the oil unless something busts and I have to.
Same oil as when you started?
Yeah. But, of course, I never had anything very valuable. Always old cars. I've been going to change it in a Jeep ever since I got it. And one day the oil pipe broke. Let my oil all out and I had to change it then. I hadn't changed it for 2 years. But it's a good idea if you got anything that's very valuable to change your oil. Just like anything else, when the oil gets dirty, it wears it.
That's terrific that you ran it so long.
Yeah. Well, I keep adding sheets, quite a little oil. Keep adding it and leak some. An old 60. Getting wore pretty bad. But something like your outfit out here, you should change it every so many thousand miles.
Yeah, I keep after pretty regular.
Yeah, well, you should.
Yeah, that's the big difference. I mean, I got 40,000 miles in 2 years.
Yeah, I wouldn't run that in a lifetime, hardly.
And I'm not too happy about it either.
Well, of course you have to, in your business, you have to drive to the city or something like that. And you get more miles. Farming, really, if you don't go visiting too much, all you do is just go to town for grain, groceries, something like that, and you don't get too many miles. A new car would last a farmer a lifetime if he didn't have an accident and save it up. If I could have this old Jeep when it was brand new, probably it'd have gone me a good lifetime. The only thing it would be, it would rust out more than it would wear out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still, sometimes when I think about things, I'm sorry I was born in 1945, and I think it would have been nice to have been born in 1900.
Oh, you'd like to go back instead of ahead, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people would right now. Yeah, you'd really, coming up from the city, if you could come up here in 1900, you'd really enjoyed it more than you do now. Because now everything is so damn fast, and all you can hear is two high taxes or something like that. Everything is money, and everything, I think you're going to develop Vermont and make it better. They spoiled it. They spoiled the whole state. They've sold the whole state out. It's nowhere near as good as it was back in the 1900s. There's only one thing, and that's electricity, and I'd hate to go without. Everything else, I'd just turn it right by, if you could. Electricity, you'd hate to get along without that.
What year did you get electricity here?
Around in the 50s, I'd say. Yeah, because I come back out of the service in the fall of 45. And it might have been 48, but I think it was closer to 1950, got the lights in here. See, they had to come a mile just for one place here.
And that's changed quite a bit.
Yeah. See, Arthur hadn't built then, and the Oxalls, the place where the Oxalls owned, they didn't have electricity. I come clear from that pole down in George's pasture, right back of Earl's house there, a barn. And they had to come clear from there, and they come up in the spring of the year when the roads were bad. But it didn't cost me, back then, it didn't cost me anything. Because we straightened out this deal that they had with Commander Jordan's people there. They didn't get a right of way, didn't get the permission to put the poles, and he was either going to make them buy the farm or move the poles. And my brother and a friend of ours, they bought the place and bought the hill up where you live. And that gave the REA a right to keep the poles and the wires there. And by doing that, they come clear up here and put my lights in. So it made a good deal for everybody. Because you're going to cut all of Russia right off, you know. Because they didn't have no place they could bypass.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to cost them a lot of money if they bypassed either way. Because this commander and his aunt, they own both sides of the road. There still was no room for the poles next to the road. The telephone had already been through there. So they've got to bypass that. They've got to go around it. And they're going to cost them a lot of money if it had to.
So except for the electricity, you just assume... Be living at about what time would you have held the clock and the calendar?
Well, I bought this place and I run it a year before I was old enough to buy it. I bought it in 1929. I think the fall of 1929 I bought it. But I'd always been there.